Bring the Hummus podcast. I'm Kimberly, your host, and I'm super excited to be here with you today. Did You Bring the Hummus is a podcast to help you go vegan. Every 2 weeks, I'll share a new episode discussing all things vegan. Most importantly, we'll talk about how to embrace this meaningful decision with fervor and fun. Episodes post every other Monday on your favorite podcast app. Before we get started, I have one very important question for you. Did you bring the hummus? Today, I am joined by Susan Francis, health coach, Tai Chi and Qigong teacher, artist, and all-around awesome vegan. Susan coaches people on their vegan journey, teaches Tai Chi and Qigong locally, and is part of the VegFest Expo support team and helps facilitate the festivals and promote veganism. Susan loved animals from as early an age as she can remember, drawing them almost as soon as she could hold a pencil, especially horses. She studied art and music in college and worked for the Ohio Division of Wildlife as their first staff artist. Susan also holds a degree in hotel and restaurant management and owned a restaurant and catering business for 4 years. Additionally, she also holds a certificate in plant-based nutrition from eCornell. With an understanding of the challenges that transitioning to a plant-based diet or vegan lifestyle can present, Susan loves coaching people to find easy and delicious foods for better health. Susan is a joy to speak with and incredibly interesting. Enjoy. Hi, Susan. Thanks so much for joining me.
Hi, Kimberly. It's my pleasure.
I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. Just a quick aside, Susan and I have connected because she is connected with Helene, who runs the virtual VegFest, where my Monday night show, Fireside Chat with Kimberly, is hosted. And Susan started checking in and commenting, and we've kind of developed this nice little friendship through the comments and through the show. And so now, because Susan is also an awesome vegan, she has agreed to come on and be a part of Did You Bring the Hummus? So thank you for that, Susan. I really am so glad that you're here.
Well, thank you for asking me. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. So the first question I ask, I try not to keep it too formulaic, but because my focus at Did You Bring the Hummus is to help encourage people who are, you know, right on the cusp or considering going vegan, I want them to always hear stories from vegans from everywhere of how they decided to go vegan, what their journey was. So I would love to hear about your vegan journey.
Okay. Well, I was definitely not vegan for the majority of my life. I've been vegan fully vegan since 2012. And I was, you know, mostly vegetarian before that, but I still was eating some animal products. It occurred to me, well, let me back up a minute. The reason I got sort of interested is I got introduced to a raw food restaurant when I was dating a guy from California, went out for a visit. We went to a couple of raw food restaurants and I was like, wow, this is really good. I heard about raw food, but I had no idea it could be like this. And what is raw mac and cheese or something. I forget exactly what it was, but it was cheesy noodles or something like that. Anyway, it was delicious. And I came back all excited to where I live in Asheville, North Carolina, and I was looking for that. And I was like, there's nothing like that here. We had some vegan places, but nothing like that raw food place. So I kept trying to figure out how I could make that kind of thing. And just was kind of playing around with the idea of how can I, you know, move into eating more like this, but I hadn't completely given up like cheese and eggs and stuff like that. I watched Forks Over Knives as a documentary. And that was probably my biggest wake up moment. You know, it was like, okay, I can no longer support this kind of treatment of animals. I spent most of my life as a wildlife artist and an animal artist and, you know, trying to get people to really appreciate animals and the environment and, you know, what it takes to protect all that. And, you know, I'm walking around with one eye closed, not paying attention to what's happening to domestic animals. And it wasn't like I didn't know, but it was like I was just ignoring it because it was such an ingrained program. you know, mental program. And as I was starting to wake up for to that, I was like, okay, this is not going to work. I just got to stop. I'm completely out of integrity with what I say I believe. And so I'm no longer going to do that. You know, definitely it was the process in terms of finding things that I could eat. It wasn't as easy as it is today, 10 years later. And there were some things around, you know, tofurkey was around, tofutti was around. Actually, I had heard of tofutti a long time before that. You know, I just kept looking for different things and trying different things and looking at new recipes and seeing how I could, you know, I like to cook. So that was not a big deal. I mean, I've been cooking my whole life, was in the restaurant business, all kinds of stuff there. So that was not a hard thing for me. I can understand how it could be for people who don't know how to cook.
Yeah.
And, you know, or just don't have the time or whatever, but mostly just don't have the skill of, you know, how do I do this? After watching that documentary, and then I decided, well, I'm being the person I am, I need more information. and so I went and got the China study and read that whole book. And in the back of the book was, yes, you know, it's like a cut too interesting.
That's a big book. Dense. But anyway.
very much so. You know, in the back of the book, it was mentioned something about the plant-based nutrition certification program from T. Colin Campbell. And so I said, okay, I think I'm going to want to do that at some point. And then part of what really pushed me to do it, you know, I was like, oh, I don't know. It's money and time and this and that. Do I have enough of either of those? And a friend of mine got sick. And I didn't know because I hadn't heard from her for a while. And then, you know, I tried to call, but I didn't get any answer. I thought maybe she was traveling. And then I got a call from her one night and she said, I've been in the hospital. I've been in ICU. I came in with sepsis and, but I just can't eat this food here anymore. I know you've tried to help me eat before. Could you please bring me something to eat? And I went, well, it's 8 o'clock at night. I'll be there first thing in the morning. She said, okay. And so I thought, wow, what can I take her that, you know, she could eat because she's, you know, on IVs and stuff. But she was able to eat. So I made her a nice green smoothie and I put all kind of fresh fruits and, you know, made it really healthy and took it. And when I walked in the room, she was sitting in a chair with all the tubes and stuff hooked up, but she was glad to see me. And I handed her, but I have to tell you, when I saw her, I was kind of shocked because her skin just looked kind of gray. I mean, she just really didn't look well. So I handed her the smoothie and she started to drink it. And she went, oh, this tastes so good. It tastes like alive. Oh, and I went, yeah. And while I talked to her and she drank that smoothie, I was there for an hour or so. I could see the color coming back in her face. It was that dramatic and that quick. So I kept bringing her the food and kept bringing her the food and you know, while she was there and while she was in rehab and stuff. And at that point, my little inner voice said, okay, I think it's time. You got to take that course. Yeah. And so, you know, through a few other little steps, I signed up and got the certification in plant-based nutrition. That's a big part of who I am now. Mm-hmm. And because I love to help people make that kind of transition. And I know how hard it is, and I know what challenges you face because I've been there.
Yeah. You have kind of, you've created this process, right? The 7 steps, mm-hmm. you call it 7 steps.
The 7 paths to optimal wellness.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Please tell us about that.
Okay. Well, as far as, not in any particular order necessarily, but, you know, first thing people eat. So, you know, that's a big thing that you need to look at. How are you eating? What are you eating? How are you making the decision, a conscious decision of what you're choosing? And I think that that's the biggest issue for a lot of us is we just do things sort of mindlessly. What's right there in front of me? What's handy? What's easy? What's quick? And I have a tool that I can offer to people that will help make that easy and quick for them. And we can talk about that in a minute. But so that's one path, what you're eating. And of course, how you approach it, with what kind of an attitude. Your mental state of when you're eating is really important as well. Mm-hmm. And then water. And of course, we know that water is critical because, you know, we can't get along without water. It's important to have a good quality water that you can count on it being as free from toxins as possible. You know, I invested in a really good water filtration system just because I felt that was an important investment for me in my long-term health. It wasn't cheap, but I felt like this is something that is really going to make a difference for me. Because I could really taste the chlorine in the water, and I just really wanted to make that change. And I know that water can hold consciousness, and you can put your conscious intention into your water and increase the value of what you're drinking. Mm-hmm. So that's that one. And then, of course, rest, because you need to have good sleep. You need to have rest, time to rest and recharge. And, you know, that also can include meditation, which is a very important piece for me, that I do that every day. And it's like, if I don't do my meditation, my 20 minutes in the morning, I don't know what my day is going to be like.
Yeah.
And I just build that into my schedule. If that means I have to get up an extra 20 minutes earlier to get to someplace, I just do it.
Mm-hmm. Same here.
Yeah. And to remember to pace ourselves, you know, and just not beat ourselves up if we don't get everything done that's on our to-do list. Pathway is movement, can be anything in terms of if it's just walking, if it's doing your favorite sport, if it's doing yoga. For me, Qigong and Tai Chi are my favorite movements next to dancing, which of course I love to do as well. I'm actually teaching some Qigong and Tai Chi classes now, which I've been wanting to do for a long time. Some of my classes are with senior citizens, like way older than me, or not so much older, depending on who they are. And some are younger, but I love doing it. And it's a great way to connect with our body and to use our breath and our movement and our body to really connect to our innate healing abilities, because our bodies know how to heal. I mean, when you're a little kid and you fall down and you bump your knee, you don't think, oh my gosh, what am I going to put on this? What am I going to do? You just, you know, rub it and run off down the road, you know, knowing that there's just like your body is going to heal itself. Mm-hmm. If you get a scrape on your knee, you put a Band-Aid on it and it's going to heal itself.
Yeah.
But we forget, or we do things that, you know, make it harder for our body to heal itself. So when we have a chance to make that connection stronger and to use our conscious breath and our conscious movement, we can make our whole body and our immune systems much stronger. And of course, we always need that, especially now.
Oh, yeah.
This leads into sensing our energy and understanding that everything is energy. You know, now we call it the quantum physics. Mm-hmm. Ancient Chinese knew it as qi, and it actually existed in thousands of years ago for many cultures. In yoga, it's prana. In Japan, it's called ki. But it's basically the vital energy that's in everything. And so as we become more aware of our own energy, we can be more conscious about how to protect it, how to use it, and how to increase it. And make something that helps everybody, not just for yourself. Mm-hmm. And that leads me to conscious relationships, and conscious relationships of all kinds, particularly the ones that are, you know, the most intimate. If you have a partner, but even in your family, that being conscious in those relationships can lead to a better relationship in multiple levels. And you know, we're all multi-level beings, so it's important to acknowledge that in everyone else as well. So that's part of the relationship path. And then the last one is conscious living, and that includes everything that we do, how we live our lives, what impact do we have in the world, how do we buy things or not buy things, what kind of purchases do we make. And for me, this has led me to really examine the products that I use and trying to find the most sustainable, the most conscious companies, you know, when it comes to laundry products, when it comes to anything that I buy, I look very carefully at how it got there and who did it and where it came from. And even into banking, because there's a couple of conscious banking companies now that only invest in conscious companies. So it's great. So it's just like, it's kind of like having, you know, you keep peeling it off different layers and peeling off different layers. And what happens when if I look at this, and how is it connected to that? So that's what I look at as a conscious path.
Okay. I have so many comments, but I wanted you to get through them first and then thought that we'd work backwards with questions. And so first, so yeah, let's work backwards. We'll talk about the conscious living first. Since, like I said, a lot of my listeners are either not yet vegan or newbie vegan, if you have any apps or websites or products that you have found that are really helpful, or, well, products that fit that mold that you're looking for, and then any apps or websites where you would direct kind of a newbie person to check out and learn about either the products they're currently using or what they could be using instead, I would love for you to share kind of your thoughts on some of those things.
Okay. Well, I have my own little tip that I can give to people if they send me their email. It's called Build Your Own Plant-Based Meal in 5 minutes or Less.
Nice.
And it's real simple and it doesn't require a whole lot. You can use pre-made products or you can make them yourself. One of which is hummus.
Yay!
Yes, love hummus. And I actually have a recipe for that. It's on my website too. It's an oil-free hummus.
We'll link to that in the show notes for sure.
right.
Yeah.
And you know, in terms of things to transition, I would say one of my favorite guides when I was looking was Dr. Michael Greger and nutritionfacts.org. And I would highly recommend it. You know, if anybody has any question about anything that's related, like you'll find a video, 2 or 3 minute video with all the science behind it and lots of tips of, you know, how to do things on his website. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
When it comes to laundry products, I love Sheetz Laundry Club. And it's a super sustainable company. They're actually right here in North Carolina. And it is a vegan company in terms of what they use in terms of products. So that's one of my favorites.
This banking thing.
Oh, the banking.
Tell me about that.
Okay, so that's Aspiration.
Okay.
Aspiration is an online banking company. They've been around probably 12 or 15 years, I think. And the man who started it, his name is Andre Tierney. He and Elizabeth Warren actually worked together to develop the legal guidelines, because he was also a lawyer, for online banking. And so they were one of the first companies to do that. So they have a product that they offer. If you want to do a long-term investment, they only invest in conscious companies. So sustainable, conscious companies. It's a really good company. And I got an opportunity to talk to him in a Zoom call a year or so ago. And he's a really nice person who just really cares about the earth and people and the environment. And, you know, so I would suggest looking into that one. Acorns is starting to do that too. They have a new app that whenever you swipe your card, they plant a tree. Does that too. I've been doing that with Aspiration for a long time. And I got the new card from Acorns, which is also an investment. What Acorns does is when you swipe the debit card, say you buy a coffee and it's $2.50, they'll round it up to $3 and they'll invest the 50 cents. Okay. Or they'll add it to a little pile of change until you get to like $5, and then they'll invest that $5. And then you can also have regular investments if you want. but their new card is metal, not plastic.
Ah, very nice.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And it's made of recycled metal.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm definitely going to check that out. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then the movement, I realize I skipped over conscious relationships, but I want to talk about movement. So tell you know, I had my first experience with Tai Chi probably like 20 something years ago. The gym that I was going to had amazing classes. And one of them was Tai Chi. And my mom was like, we really got to check this out. So we went, and I remember it was the very first time that I can recall anyway, feeling energy in my hands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And now like I feel it all the time because I do Reiki and things like that. But back then, like I remember the first time I got that ball in between yes. my hands, that ball of energy. And we were yeah. just like moving it around and up and down and, you know, stretching out a little bit and pulling it back together. And oh, I could not believe that feeling. And, you know, you think as you're, you know, for the people who are like, no, but I want to like work out, you feel while you're doing this, like you're just moving very slowly and nothing's happening. But when you're done, like I wasn't sore, like, oh, you know, I hurt myself, but I felt like I had been moving mm-hmm. and I just felt so good. So I'd love to hear about your journey with the Tai Chi and the Qigong and how you wound up being a teacher, and tell us all the good things about it.
Okay. Well, that's perfect because at one point when I was living in Erie, Pennsylvania, a friend of mine, her mom was a Reiki master. And so we would go over to her house, and that was the first time that I actually had somebody talk to me about energy like that. She would show us Donna Eden's videos, who's, you know, Donna's a great energy worker. And so she was actually, you know, showing us how to do some work with our hands. And then I moved from there to Columbus, Ohio. And so I was looking for Qigong, really, because she said, mm-hmm. you know, Qigong would be perfect for what you want to do. But I couldn't really find a class at that point, but I did find Tai Chi. And the people that were teaching the Tai Chi were not putting any emphasis on the real energy part of it. It was more of for health, mm-hmm. which is perfect and it's great. But what happened was I went to a class and we did a movement, and it was like, you know, bring your hands up across your chest and stretch it out and breathe and bring them down and back up. And we did a few things, and then they said, okay, how do you feel? And I said, well, I feel tingly all over. And people kind of looked at me like, really? I'm not feeling that. So I think I knew how to do this a long time before that. I mean, I think I remembered really kind of feeling that when I was really young, maybe like 17, 18 years old. But, you know, at that point, people just thought like, oh, don't do that. It feels weird when you do that. You know, so it's like, okay, I just won't do that. But I think I already kind of, it was kind of tucked away. And so mm-hmm. when I started teaching the Tai Chi, it was sort of like reconnecting. And then I taught for a couple years, and then I moved to Asheville, North Carolina. And the society that I was working with, basically there was nobody in this town at that point that was doing that particular form. Mm-hmm. And it was going to take me basically starting a school myself. And I thought, I just really can't do this. And so I kind of put it on the back burner, and I would just, you know, do some, you know, Tai Chi stuff on my own. A couple of years ago, I ran into somebody who was teaching, and I thought, man, I'd really like to get back into teaching. And she was teaching a class at the yoga center here. And I got her contact, and I said, if you, you know, find anybody that might have an opening, let me know. Well, a few weeks later, she called up and said, hey, I broke my ankle. You want to take over my class? I went, okay, sure. So I did that for a little bit, and then got out of it again. And then after last year, I was like, you know, somehow I'm going to have to find a way to do this. I really, really feel like this is something that I want to want to do. And so I just kind of put it out there, and some things have shown up. And the same lady who had gone back to teaching, but was teaching somewhere else, said, I think I want to retire. Would you be interested in taking over my classes?
Nice.
I took over her class. And one class is at a retirement center, and one is in a martial arts studio, where they also have yoga and belly dance and other things. But it's primarily Tai Chi and some martial arts. So it's a really nice place to teach.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how it is. You know, I just
love it.
Keep getting drawn back to these things.
Yeah.
I think it's one of the best things that people can do, because it's so, I mean, Qigong is the grandmother of Tai Chi. If you look at it, like, Qigong's been, they know for sure that they have written records from like almost 5,000 years ago in China, and seeing, you know, like drawings and pieces of pottery that show people doing these kind of moves. And then Tai Chi is more like about 800 or 900 years old. So it like evolved into the more martial form. And the story about it that's known is that there was a family that had developed this way of fighting coming from like using the principles of Qigong and then develop a martial application for it. So using the energy work to move it into the martial form. Mm-hmm. And they were practicing, this particular family, the Chen family, had become really super skilled at it. But they didn't want to tell anybody because, you know, it gave them the edge, right?
Right.
So they had a servant whose name was Yang, Y-A-N-G. And he secretly watched them. And so he took what he learned and taught his family. And then they got really good. And they got like way better than everybody else. And they got so popular and so well known that the emperor came to them and said, teach my soldiers what you know. And so that's why the Yang style is very well known, because it was very supported by the emperor. And then there's some other individual styles that developed along the way by different people with different names and stuff. But those are the two that most people know. And in this country, most of the people are practicing Yang style because it's not quite as difficult as Chen style.
Okay.
That's why it's kind of looks a little bit like slow motion kung fu, because it kind of is, because the Tai Chi part has a martial application, but we just don't use it that way.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's so neat.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, me too. Okay, and then you were talking about rest and you know, the culture that we live in, right? It's like, if you're not burning out, you're not doing enough. And
right?
People wear it as a badge of honor. And I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, you know, people I know in the corporate realm that are like, oh, I just, you know, if I could just add a few more hours to my day, maybe I'd get everything done. Or like, it's almost like they're really proud of working 12, 15 hours, 18 hours a day. And it just makes me feel really sad. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe there are some people who really, they do thrive on that. I don't know. But I feel like we're missing out so much when we aren't resting. And then people think like resting, oh, does that mean I just lay on the couch and watch TV? Like, no, I mean, it could if that works for you, but that's not everything, you know. Meditation is a form of rest, like you said. Reading, getting lost in a story, you know, that is definitely resting. And we just don't take enough time.
Yeah, I think our American system has really hurt us in that respect. You know, other countries have a lot more paid vacation time, for one thing.
That too, yeah.
But just a general attitude. And if you really look at the longest living populations, when they did this study about the blue zones, those people don't work 18 hours a day. You know, they build into their lives, they build in time to rest. And the rest can be as simple as just sitting down, having a meal with a family, or sitting and talking with a friend. That could be rest. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to be sleeping, although I highly recommend that. But, you know, and everybody has different amounts that they feel like they need. But I think that if we don't keep that balance, that will burn us out. And the proof is how unhealthy a lot of people are in this country.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the fact that our body needs rest, sleep time, actual sleep time, in order to rejuvenate itself, in order to repair itself, because we're going through all these things all day long and our little body's in there working and, you know, burning energy and burning the food and eliminating all the food and sweating or whatever. And, you know, it's something you definitely need to include that. Now, as I said, for me, meditation is key, but Qigong is meditative to me.
Mm-hmm.
Less so when I'm teaching.
That makes sense.
Well, because I have to think about and describing in words what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
But once you learn the moves, whether you're doing it as a Tai Chi form or whether you're just doing Qigong moves by themselves, you know, that's the most people do Qigong just as a repetitive move and then do a different one. Where Tai Chi is more like connecting one move, flowing into the next one, into the next one, into the next one. So it becomes more of a flowing movement of meditation type. And those all work for me as a way of resting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have.
It might be that you know, going for a bicycle ride is resting for you.
Right,
because you change your mind state.
Yeah. Yeah, it really helps you kind of either think through the day or let the day go, or, you know, yeah, I have a daily yoga practice and I feel like it is, you know, as I move from, you know, pose to pose, for me, yoga is not about weight loss. It's not about a yoga booty or any of that stuff. You know, if any of that happens, cool. But for me, like, getting on the mat is telling myself that I matter because I'm taking the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the movement allows me to move energy and emotion and all of that around, get some of it out. I mean, mm-hmm. there are times where, you know, I've settled in for a yoga practice and, you know, 5 minutes in, I'm in extended child's pose in a puddle of tears on the mat. Because that's what I needed in that moment, you know, and that helps me, you know, along with, I also do meditation and, you know, it helps me to get all that stuff that's bubbling, and it helps my body rest better. I sleep better mm-hmm. when I do those things because yeah. I'm helping stuff come out. Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, that's the whole point of doing something like yoga or Tai Chi or Qigong, because if we get things that are stuck, that energy gets stuck, and then it basically affects us on a whole bunch of levels, mainly yeah. physical, but
right.
also but also it comes from other things that have happened mentally and emotionally too. So just being able to check in like that, really, really huge.
Mm-hmm.
It's really huge. Makes a big yeah. difference.
And
that's one of the things that really it makes me feel good when I have the class and people come up after me and saying, oh, I feel so good when I do this. I don't want to miss this class.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, right?
You yeah. need it. It's so beautiful. Tell me more about water. And we can even talk about the energy part of it too, if you right. want. Yeah.
I actually got really interested in water consciousness about 10 years ago. When I was in a class and they were talking about the energy in water, and they talked about Dr. Emoto's work with consciousness and water, and that by putting an intention, a thought intention, into water, you could actually change the structure of the water. And at first I was like, what, really? And then I started looking it up and I went, wow, look what they did. And they actually have slides where they froze the water crystals, and that you could see the difference in the crystal from the intention that was sent into the water.
Mm-hmm.
So if they had a glass that they wrote love on a piece of paper and put it, the glass of water on top of it, it would have a certain structure. Mm-hmm. And then you'd take another one and they same water source, nothing different, but they put it just a piece of paper that said the word hate. Mm-hmm. And the water crystals would just like get all distorted and weird. And mm-hmm. there's some things you can look online to see that, the studies that they've done with that Dr. Emoto's work. But there was also some similar studies that they did in Germany, and they had actually all the same water, but they actually looked at what individual people would if they had an individual difference. Mm-hmm. And they gave them like little droppers, and each person got little like slides, and they would put droppers of their water. And, you know, again, with the different emotions, but also each person, their influence on the way the structure was clear, that each person has their own individual ability to put that emotion into the water. So how we think about what we do, and since we are mostly water, I mean, like 70% or something of our bodies is water. Yeah. That's how powerful our thoughts are. That's how powerful our intention can make so much difference. You can see how it affects plants. Mm-hmm. You know, people will say, oh, I can't grow plants. Well, do you like give it a little love?
Are you approaching the plant thinking I'm going to kill this plant, you know, right, exactly. Or are you approaching the plant, like you said, with love?
Plants do know. I mean, they respond because they've got water in them too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's so neat. Yeah. I think I take, I always have like a water bottle with mm-hmm. me. And, when I fill it each time, I'll hold it. And I like think about, mm-hmm. you know, like how, like nourishing or cleansing, like whatever it is that I need then. Yeah. And I kind of put it into the water, and it's
you can even
feel difference in me. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's kind of a fun experiment to do. I did it one time when I was working, and I took some water when I first discovered I took some water, and I had two glasses of water, and I had the first glass, actually I had one glass of water and I had the glass of water from the tap, and I had somebody that I was working with taste it. And I said, okay, just drink the water, and go, yeah, it tastes like normal, kind of chlorine-y, like normal water. And I said, okay. And so I just held my hand over it, same water, mm-hmm. and just sent it some love, just not for long, maybe less than a minute. And then I handed it back to him. I said, try it now. And he tasted it and he went, what did you do? It's good. It tastes different now. So just put some love in it.
Yep. That's what we need. Just put more love into everything, right?
Yes.
Keep definitely. Putting it out there, raising the vibration.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, so good. I don't want to miss this too, because you had a whole different life before you became a restaurateur and got into being vegan and doing all the movement stuff. Like, you were an artist of wildlife artist, and mm-hmm. you even designed the stamp for the Ohio mm-hmm. Wildlife Collection. Like, that's so cool. So, I mean, you know, when I think about, it's funny because you had mentioned kind of that you were doing these things, but you weren't vegan and you hadn't yet made the connection. And like my whole life too, I spent, like, as a kid, I was always like running into the bathroom, turning off the water while my family were brushing their teeth, and I was picking up garbage. And I was like, don't take such a long shower. I was always worried about like the environment and taking care mm-hmm. of the wild animals and all that stuff. But same thing, I wasn't vegan then either. But just because it just seems so cool. And like, do you still have art out there? Like, tell us about your art too.
Well, I started working at the Division of Wildlife, the Ohio Division of Wildlife, before I finished. I never actually finished. I was kind of fed up with the art department at Ohio State, and I started working there, and they hired me to draw maps of the wildlife areas. And it was kind of funny because I'd never had a, you know, mechanical drawing class ever, but it was not that difficult. So I did that. And then they found out I could, you know, do animal drawings and stuff. So I did a lot of animal illustration and paintings and stuff for the department. And I think I might've been there 1 or 2 years, probably 2 years. And they decided they wanted to do a collector's stamp for non-game wildlife, because, you know, typically you had to buy a stamp to get a hunting license or a fishing license. And so that was that had been going on since like the 1940s. So that was like an old thing, but nobody had done, Ohio was actually the first state to do that. And nobody had done one that was specifically, the revenues were going to specifically go to non-game animals to preserve habitat for like songbirds and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that's where that came about. And so I did do that painting. It was a pair of cardinals, a male and female cardinal. They printed about 40,000 or something like that. They didn't sell them all. But the interesting thing about that was that a lot of the support came from the hunting clubs. you think that a lot of hunters, they understood that they needed to protect all the habitat. Mm-hmm. Not just, and you know, a lot of them cared about that too. But anyway, that was that. And then I, after I'd been there for about 8 years, I decided that I wanted to go out on my own. And so I did a lot of freelance work, illustrating and painting wildlife. And over the years, I entered my art into a lot of art shows, including the National Aviary in Pittsburgh. I was in that show. I was in a big wildlife art show in Jamestown, New York, the Nature Art Festival. In fact, I think that one's still going on. And then so I did a lot of different work. And did things for, you know, some, you know, I would do some paintings, and then I had an agent that sold some for me. So there's probably some things around in different places. I still have a few pieces hanging around my house. I did a lot of animal portraits, particularly dogs. everybody loves their doggies.
Yeah.
And so much more than cats, I'm sorry. The number of cat portraits I could probably count on one hand, but dogs, dozens.
Yeah, I bet.
but so that connection to the animals was there from, like, you know, from when I was a little kid. I used to pretend I was a horse, and I'd draw paintings of horses, and, you know, draw them and paint them and stuff. So that connection was definitely there, but, you know, not paying attention to, you know, what was going on with the poor little cows and piggies. And, you know, it's so much more open now about that. There's so many people that are so much more aware. Like even like Paul McCartney used to say, if slaughterhouses had glass windows, then anybody would be vegan. I mean, vegetarian, yeah. Actually. But, you know, so it's like you don't want to know it, because it's too painful.
It sure is. Yeah.
And we're at a place now where a lot of people are really aware of what we have done to the earth. We are reaping the benefits of our misuse and our mishandling of our poor mother. You know, I'm very concerned about it. I really worry about what will happen if we don't literally do a whole lot of things a whole lot differently. I really admire Dr. Rao and some of the others that are working so strongly to help the world go vegan. Mm-hmm. And that's where I am with, you know, using that love that I have for the animals as an impetus to help people wake up and do that too. It's all connected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, as kids, like you said, we've grown up, most of us have grown up where we weren't fully aware. And honestly, I think our parents weren't either. I remember, my mom's vegan now, but I remember asking her as a kid, like, where's our food come from? And she was like, oh, but, those animals are raised for food, so it's different.
Right.
And you're like, oh, okay. Because, you're little and like your parents are the experts and everything. So you just let it go. But
exactly.
At the same time, it's also like, oh, is that really? All right. And you just kind of forget about it. But yeah, I think we know as kids and then we get away from it and then we come back to ourselves. And for a lot of us, it comes up, it comes out as, we go vegan, we really get back to that connection and we start to learn the painful stuff, the hard stuff, and you just can't be a part of that anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think the more people learn, the more people will join us.
Well, I agree with you. And when I first made the decision and people would say, oh, gee, isn't that hard? Nope. Because I could not unsee what I have seen.
Yeah.
And when people say, oh, but geez, yeah, that baby calf.
Right.
That baby calf never got any of that. Mm-hmm. And that little baby goat never got any of that.
Yeah.
No. So it's like, no, I can't. No, it's not hard. It's not hard.
Not at all.
I can't be part of that. No more.
Yeah. And then you can think about, you combine like learning and really starting to understand and feel, really feel for the animals and what humans have done to them. But then we also have so many options now. Like, you don't have to eat lentil loaf, every night.
Right.
It's like, vegan cheese is good now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I ran into one just recently, and I've been trying to find it because it doesn't exist here, and it just ended up in a discount grocery, and I went, oh my gosh, I have to get this, I have to try this, and it's a Canadian company, and it's like a camembert, and I'm like, what? So I grabbed one, I ran home, and I tasted it. I went, oh, I don't even know. When I opened it, I was like, I don't even know if I'm going to like this because it smells so much like cheese, so much like camembert.
Yeah.
And it's delicious. And it's made with cashews. And it looks and tastes better than camembert, in my opinion. And I actually had been following them on Instagram, and I sent them a message. I went, oh, you guys, I found your cheese. It's not really available here, but. So I ran back to the store and bought two more. And nice. I sent them a message and I said, can it be frozen? And they said, yes, up to 6 months.
Do you remember the brand?
Yes, it's the Fromagerie.
Oh, oui, oui.
It's Fraux Magerie.
Okay.
Like fromage, but like combination word.
Yeah. Super cute. Oh, I love it's a
fromagerie on Georgian Bay, and they're in Ontario.
Okay.
But I've seen them Instagram, and their cheeses look fantastic. And now that I've tried this one, I'm like, oh, I think I'm probably gonna have to go to Canada or something to get this. Because I don't know if they've even got it into the United States yet. But wow, this stuff is good.
Oh,
so if you find it. By all means,
snatch it up.
Whatever it is, I'm sure it's going to be good.
Awesome. All right. Well, I have one final question for you.
Okay.
What's your favorite way to eat hummus?
Well, I have my oil-free hummus that I make, and my favorite way, I think, is to use it as a salad dressing.
Oh, very nice.
I mean, I eat it a lot, and I make it probably once a week. But I really like to just use it as a salad dressing. And I also like to put it on sweet potatoes.
Okay. Oh, I like that. I've never had it on. You just bake the sweet potato and put the hummus on? Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah.
Yeah, or steam it in the Instant Pot. And open it up.
Still have to get one of those.
I have to say, I was glad that I made the investment.
Yeah,
it was. It's, I use it all the time. Well, it makes it really easy to cook the chickpeas or black beans or whatever. Just throw them in, push the button, walk away.
Yeah, all done. Oh, that sounds nice.
Yeah,
I don't think about that.
Well, and you don't really, the beauty of it is it'll keep it warm for you, and 8 hours if you want it to.
Wow.
You'll just keep it warm. Yeah. Or you can sit, some of them have timers too, so you can do it that way as well. Yeah, it's a good investment.
Yeah, very cool. All right. Well, I'm gonna write that down. Finally get an Instapot. So Susan, if people want to reach out to you, get in touch, work with you, because by the way, everyone, Susan also coaches people to go vegan and teaches Tai Chi and Qigong, as she said. Where can they find you? What's the best way to get in touch with you?
Well, I have a website where they can send me an email.
Okay.
My email is Vegucating. It's vegucating@gmail.com.
I love it. Very cool. And I'll include, a link to your website.
That one is actually Conscious Eating Consulting. You can just, if you just drop that in on Google, it should take you there.
Very cool.
And I have Instagram. Instagram is CECHealth18. Drop me an email. I'll send you that how to build your own plant-based meal in 5 minutes or less.
Yes.
Super easy. It's kind of like going to Chipotle or someplace, pick from here, pick from here, pick from here, and you're done.
Oh, that's awesome. Those are the best meals too, right? So many different flavors and textures and colors, and it's so interesting and
right.
Good stuff. For sure. All right. Well, all of your contact information will also be in the show notes, so people can just click right there and get right to you. Thank you so much, Susan. This was amazing. I love that we talked not just about veganism, but we talked about energy. We talked about a little bit about the environment. We talked about all the different lives you've led. You're so interesting and so cool. I cannot thank you enough for joining me tonight.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thanks so much for asking me. It's great to be able to talk to you and, just let people know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Oh, it's so cool. All right. Well, thank you so much. Welcome back. Did you learn so many things? I know I did. From the various aspects of conscious eating to the history of Tai Chi and Qigong and everything in between, I could have listened to Susan all day. As promised, the links to her website, as well as her favorite hummus recipe, can be found in the show notes. Speaking of that hummus recipe, she posted it on my birthday in 2019. Susan had no way to know that. We hadn't even met yet. You can contact Susan via email at vegucating@gmail.com. That is spelled out in the show notes for ease. Or her website at consciousheartheatingcoach.com. Follow her on Instagram at CECHealth18. I hope you found this episode helpful and inspiring. Please subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. And if you're loving it, please give Did You Bring the Hummus a 5-star rating. It's an easy way to keep supporting the show. You are also invited to join my free private Facebook group for fans of the show. You can find the link in the show notes. Tomorrow, I am hosting a powerful 2/22/2022 workshop where we go on a journey of self-discovery. Whether you are looking for expansion, transformation, peace, or deep understanding, you will find it here. This deep inner work opens us up to healing and opportunities not available to us otherwise. While this workshop is not vegan focused, it can shift your perspective and make going vegan easier. My signature class, Veganize It, is back. Whether you're looking to veganize a meal for a vegan in your life, you're looking to start the move to veganism, or you're somewhere in between, this is a great class to get pointers, helpful tips, and all attendees leave with a vegan version of their favorite animal-based recipe. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at Did You Bring the Hummus, and visit my website, didyoubringthehummus.com, for more information about me, updates on what I'm working on, new podcast episodes, and all things vegan. Finally, I would love to hear from you. What do you need help with? Is there a topic you want to hear covered on a future episode? DM me on Instagram or send me an email at didyoubringthehummus@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.